Fan Drive Time, Sportsnet 590, The Fan, Ben Ennis, and Stephen Brunn. We're going to talk to Solomon Wilcox in a couple of minutes, former NFL safety and host of the opening drive on Sirius XM NFL Radio. We got into it a little bit off the top of the show, Stephen. But man, these windows, they close quickly. And when you have, especially in a cap league, in a cap sport like the NFL or a cap sport like the NHL, when you have these opportunities, when you have close to as perfect a team as you can have, considering the constraints of the salary cap, you got to break through. Because if you don't, things change very quickly, whether that's being unable to return the same team that won a division and scored a trillion points like the Cowboys did, or like the Leafs have been able to do over the last couple of years. If you don't win in the playoffs, and it's been actually a pretty long window considering how long it can last in the NHL for the Leafs, but for the Cowboys to have the team that they had, to show the promise that they showed this season, and to come up empty, granted, against a pretty good team and maybe an underrated team in the San Francisco 49ers. I think Jerry Jones is kind of right. When you get this combination of players together, you need to have success. They didn't have it, and who knows? Maybe Russell Wilson ends up in the NFC East next year.
Well, it gets down to, and I think you hit on it right off the top, Ben. It's in a cap league, right? It's because it starts to be how you apportion your money. You know, who you're paying, and because you're always paying guys for past performance, so you have to hit that moment where, your the distribution of money is kind of makes sense with the actual talent in the present, and it's a really quick tipping point to get to a point where you're paying guys for what they used to be, and that limits what you can do around them. You know, you're overpaying a quarterback, or you're paying a quarterback what a quarterback gets these days, but he isn't the superstar that he once was. Look at Ezekiel Elliott with the Dallas Cowboys right now. If you want to talk about the Cowboys, like, what is he? He's broken down, right?
Yeah. And what was he yesterday? A guy who had a torn pec muscle or something, and still getting the lead back share of the carries.
Mm-hmm.
Something weird going on with what Ezekiel Elliott was yesterday, what he's become this season, well, and obviously what they paid him, which is not surprising considering the history of paying running backs. I don't know what you think about the Niners here now, Stephen, because Kyle Shanahan's kind of gone up and down as far as his perception amongst fans, at least. I mean, after being the offensive coordinator on that Falcons team that had the Patriots beat, done, buried, finished, and kept throwing and throwing and throwing and blowing a 28-3 lead in the second half. He has all the talent in the world, and they were life and death to finally get to the playoffs. They trade all the first-round picks in the world to move up to number three to get Trey Lance, and he's shown a little bit when he's been in games, but has lost the opportunity to start. And, in fact, Jimmy Garoppolo, when he's returned under center, has been the guy that's at least gotten them into the playoffs. Now he's won yet another playoff game. He is a guy that brought this team to a Super Bowl once upon a time. It was not that long ago that Jimmy Garoppolo not only brought the Niners to a Super Bowl, had them with a lead in the second half against the great Kansas City Chiefs and Patrick Mahomes. It's a really hard franchise to figure out because, I mean, I could see them going into Lambeau next week. I mean, Bosa would need to get healthy. That would help a whole lot.
Yes.
But the way that running game works, and Deebo Samuel, I mean, talk about, doing something outside of the box, turning a wide receiver into a running back and looking like one of the best running backs in the entire NFL. It's a weird franchise to figure out because they've had success. They've done some weird things. And yet here they are with a chance to maybe win a Super Bowl.
Well, that's it. It's like the Jimmy Garoppolo puzzle. You saw in the second half of that game why you might have doubts about Jimmy Garoppolo, right? that's his career, right? That's the guy. And he's, going into the game and even after the first half, you're saying, well, boy, what a bunch of schmucks. They traded up to get Trey Lance and gave up all those draft picks. And look, they've got a guy right under their nose who's just fine. Then you go, no, actually, he's what he is, right? But the other pieces there are, that defensively they're sensational. Deebo Samuel's unbelievable. He might be the most exciting player in the league, and there's a lot of competition right now. It's a good time for, but I'm not sure I've ever seen a guy quite like him. And yeah, Bosa, you know, Bosa's got a concussion, so we'll see. But yeah, I could they win out in the NFC? Yeah, absolutely. Do I think Jimmy Garoppolo is going to end up in Canton? No, probably not. You know, so I like.
Yeah, no, I'm with you. It's and you know what? Maybe Trey Lance turns into something. But it was kind of for a team in very much win now mode. And I mean, Kyle Shanahan, there's another sliding doors scenario where they don't make the playoffs and maybe he's fired. But yeah, for a team that was in win now mode to trade all those first round picks for a guy that you're selecting third overall, who you expect, I mean, you're a quarterback, you're selected third overall, you're expected to start in your rookie season, and if you're starting for the San Francisco 49ers in 2021-22, you're maybe going to start a playoff game and have expectations of winning a Super Bowl. For him to not even have the starting job now, to have Jimmy Garoppolo at least do the job, you know, respectably well, despite the turnover in the second half, it's a very hard situation to figure out. And if you're a Niners fan, aren't you also thinking about, I think it was two first-round picks this year and then a couple more coming down the pipe, what you could have done with those picks if you would use them on players? Because, I mean, first-round picks in the NFL, they help you immediately, especially at number three. What you could have done with somebody that's playing on your roster, instead you got a good backup quarterback. It was... Yeah, it was a curious move, to be sure.
Well, the other thing is, I think, Ben, you look at that and you think, well, yes, Joe Burrow is really good, and Josh Allen, man, he's great. But there's such a long list of guys that have been picked in those top 10 quarterbacks and those top 10 slots that have busted over the last few years that, you know, like they gave up a ton to get Trey Lance, and he'd better be that guy given what they gave up for him. But there's just, you look around and you think, what if he's one of these guys that don't make it? You know, what if he's one of these guys that ends up as a career backup? You know, or Marcus Mariota coming in on the, special, you know, one play every, three plays a game. There's so many. They've been wrong. Teams have been wrong on so many guys, and so many guys have plateaued. Yeah, like maybe he is the second coming of Steve Young, but you know, you got a guy there who's kind of workmanlike and competent, and he could get you to a Super Bowl, I think, if he doesn't make too many mistakes along the way.
It's a pretty horrific mistake, though, to be sure. I mean,
yeah.
When you're up multiple scores and to overthrow a receiver by about 5 feet, and then immediately have the Cowboys come back and just give them life. It does help to have Mike McCarthy on the other side. Also, before we move off of this one, man, the Cowboys even got the ball back there. I mean, that was just a sloppily played game on both sides. That the Niners had a chance to sneak the ball for an inch to get a first down and ice the game, and they end up taking a penalty. The Cowboys taking a million penalties. I mean, somebody who played the game like Solomon Wilcots could perhaps better answer this. But if there's one thing that you can generally put on a head coach, I think it's penalties, isn't it? Isn't it? Like, if you were going to pull one thing out of that game for the Cowboys, and if you're a Cowboys fan who doesn't want to see any more of Mike McCarthy, aren't you looking at the penalty after penalty after penalty in huge spots and saying, this is a team that is not coached very well?
Yeah, I think so. Like, that's an outsider. Like, we're all outsiders, right? But I think at this stage in the season, if you're taking sloppy mental mistake penalties, and what did they took like 8 penalties on offense, right? It was a horrific number of penalties Dallas took in that game. It speaks to something, right? A team not being prepared, a team not being mentally sharp. It's inexcusable, right, to get to that point in a season and get to that stage in a season and do that stuff. So yeah, as much as you can, like, I'm not sure who to blame for the quarterback draw at the end. Like, lots of blame to go around, but it wasn't just that. It's that they played a sloppy football game in the biggest football game of the year, and you can't do that.
No, you can't. The Raptors are playing some good basketball right now. I mean, when they're not losing to Dwayne Casey and the Detroit Pistons, which they always do, which is, you know what? I mean, we talk all the time about wanting DeMar DeRozan to do well if you're a Raptor fan. Yeah, it hurts to lose to a team like the Detroit Pistons if you're a Raptors team with playoff aspirations. But if Dwayne Casey's got a smile on his face, yeah, you know what? Maybe you're not so broken up about it. But they follow that up the following night, beating the Milwaukee Bucks, which they always do, except the two previous times they've done it without Giannis Antetokounmpo in the lineup. He's in the lineup. They totally limit his opportunities. They send him to the line a bunch, but he makes all of his free throws. And all of a sudden, Stephen, we got a team who is headed into the All-Star break or the midway point of the season. They're going to be above 500. That we know. Mm-hmm. We also know Kevin Durant is out for multiple weeks, if not a month, with another knee injury. So who knows what the Nets are going to be at the end of the season. And yeah, the Bucks are the defending champs, and despite the fact that you beat them in a regular season game, they're going to be there. Outside of the Nets and the Bucks, and okay, Miami maybe with Kyle Lowry, there's a big murky middle of the Eastern Conference. And the Raptors, the way they played recently, fit right into it, maybe at the top of it. Let's talk to Alvin Williams, Sportsnet Raptors analyst, who's on the line right now. How's it going, Alvin?
Good. How are you?
I'm doing real well. So yeah, I've gone so back and forth on this Raptors team from basically the start of the season to now, but we have a larger sample of the games that they played, and we've had a larger sample of the core guys playing together. It's hard not to think of them, at least talent-wise, and at their best, as one of the top four teams in the Eastern Conference.
Yeah, I mean, you're starting to see everything come together. As long as the health stays there and the consistency stays there, your top three players are playing at a high level. Now you want, you know, everyone else to be consistent, whether it's the bench or whether they're role players. And you still haven't had a full dose yet all the way. You know, Gary Trent Jr. hasn't been playing as of late, and guys are still playing well, but top four, I'm not sure, but definitely in the midst of all of that, they're going to compete with any of those teams, I think, from top to bottom.
You mentioned the word consistency, Alvin. I want, you know, from a player's point of view, like you played on, you know, with a lot of different groups of guys. How can you explain two games like those two games that we just saw, you know, playing, losing to one of the worst teams in the league in Detroit, as you know, they do seem to struggle with Dwayne Casey and his Pistons. And then going into Milwaukee and beating the Bucks with Giannis and looking, you know, as I say, like a potential contender. How can the same team have done that in consecutive nights?
You know, I mean, that's the NBA. I've seen it for years, right? I've seen, you know, Golden State just, you know, get beat, right? And then they go to Chicago and beat the top team in the East by like 30 points. It happens in the NBA, but if you take, you know, the past, I guess, what, 9 games, is 7-2. So you're going to drop some games. It all depends on, you know, sometimes the matchups. It depends on what's going on the road. A lot of things go into it. But your better teams, when you want to get to that level, you want to be more and more consistent, to your point. So those teams you're supposed to beat, the better teams will beat those teams 90% of the time. But that's what you want to get to. You want to get to that consistent level. But once again, it is the NBA. You drop some of those games, and you win some of the games you shouldn't win. But I think overall, the team is trending in the right direction.
Yeah, well, and I mentioned just talent level that they, to my eyes, appear to be a top four team in the Eastern Conference. But I will say that talent is limited basically to five guys, maybe six, because the depth has not been great, and it's forced the best players on this team to play a ton of minutes. Fred VanVleet is first in the NBA in minutes played per game. OG Anunoby is eighth. Pascal Siakam is 10th. Scottie Barnes is 15th. Now, these aren't guys like in LeBron's age bracket. They are sub 30, but at a certain point in an 82-game season, is that going to start to wear on these guys? Should you worry about the minutes that the starters are playing?
And you know what? I wouldn't, because the game and their style of play, if you look at all the players that log in those minutes, they're versatile players, right? They're scoring, they're assisting, they're playing defense. Although it sounds like a lot, it's not that load, if you know, like a LeBron James would have to carry a load for four other guys. It's three guys and four guys, and you have, when you talk about a Scottie Barnes and you talk about a Gary Trent Jr., Scottie Barnes is someone who does a lot of things. So it's not one player that has the responsibility of doing everything for the whole team. So you have multiple players that are very versatile. Although they're playing a lot of minutes, they are having support from one another to carry that load. So I don't think it's the same as back in the day where the game is much physical, much more physical, and that brutal type of schedule. The game is more wide open, and the players are taking advantage of it. So although they are playing a lot of minutes, I don't think they'll suffer from it too much.
Alvin, at some point, do you think that they're going to have to figure out a conventional point guard backup for Fred VanVleet, or can they continue to do what they're doing? You know, using Pascal as kind of a point forward, bringing the ball up. Obviously, Malachi Flynn hasn't, you know, kind of become what they had hoped he'd become, at least at this stage in his career. Is that something they're going to need down the road here?
You know, I don't even know what the conventional point guard looks like anymore in today's game. You know, the person that, mm-hmm. you know, set the table, and, you know, we talk about positionless basketball, and I feel like the Raptors, they do have multiple players that can handle the ball, whether it's Pascal, whether it's Fred, whether it's Scotty Barnes. You know, I think that's something that's an advantage to the team. When you do want that person that can come in, that can calm everything down and still give you what a Fred VanVleet may give you on different aspects of the game. But I do believe the Raptors do have enough ball handlers for their style of play that Nick Nurse invites. I think the personnel is there. I would like to see have more of a conventional big man, that is, you know, mm-hmm. instead of have Pascal Siakam and those guys have to bang it, because that's when you get worn out. That's when you'd be able to slow a game down in the playoffs, when you have that type of big man that can be physical, that can defend the paint, and that can alleviate some of the pressure from Pascal and OG and, you know, and Chris, those guys that have to play that big man position.
You know what would help is having like a veteran backup point guard, like a Goran Dragic. That would really help, I think. I mean, they're paying him $20 million, Alvin. And, you know, I know he deleted the Instagram post of him at the Heat workout facility. I mean, this is – I don't know why fans aren't taking to the Twitter machine every day to scream about how this guy – I mean, if he looked like he did at the beginning of the season when he actually was playing with this team, perhaps you don't want him. But we all know Goran Dragic is a good, serviceable NBA player. They could use him. They're paying him. He's going to be playing somewhere else after the trade deadline, we know. Like, this is pretty infuriating to have a guy who you traded for who's just decided to go away and until the trade deadline.
Hey, those decisions are above my pay scale. I do not know what to say, what to think. But to your point, I, when Goran was here, you know, I think the team wasn't sure what direction or what they possibly could be. But I believe if the team was playing and they had all the bodies and pieces, they would feel like that position would be much more valuable and appreciate it. Because now, as your point, he is someone that can score the ball from the outside. He brings the toughness. He brings leadership. He brings experience. And that's something that the Raptors would need, you know, any team would need that. But I don't know if the Raptors were looking in that direction, you know, at that moment when he was playing. And who knows why he left. I don't know. Like I said, that's above my pay scale. But he's definitely a valuable asset to any team.
What do you think, you know, again, speaking of being above all of our pay scale, what do you think that the front office has learned about, like as you said, I think going into the season, they're trying to figure out what they had, right? And in, not just in terms of this year, but in terms of what, you know, building for the future, building towards a championship run. Do you have the pieces? Do you have to take this apart and put it back together in a certain way? What's Scotty Barnes going to be? They didn't know. But, you know, we're heading towards a trade deadline now. You know, and again, at the beginning of the season, buy or sell, you could have made an argument either way. What do you think, you know, if you're looking at this team from 35,000 feet, Alvin, do you have kind of the core of a championship contender here? Are you building on what you got?
That's interesting because I believe, you know, when they all make commitments to OG, Fred, and Pascal through their contract, they made that commitment. And I think, you know, early on in the season with every other one being out and not really getting a large sample size of that, they're starting to see how good they are and how their games are developing, how they're playing well alongside of each other. And I also believe they're also adding value if that trade talk is there. People are looking at the team, and they're making a great case for themselves. So I think their front office should be pleased with what they have. I'm sorry with the background. I'm in the arena.
That's a nice song.
I think they will be pleased with what they have because they're adding a lot of value, but also they're trending once again in the right direction, helping this team move forward.
All right. I do want to ask you one more question. I know it's difficult with the anthem blaring in the background, but the Raptors are playing the Heat tonight, which you're not at that game, are you? You're at the – what game are you at?
I'm at the Heat game.
Yeah,
I'm at the Raptors Heat game. I'm in Miami. Oh, okay. Yes, I am.
All right. Okay. Well, so this is a perfect segue then. because Kyle's not going to play in this game. They're calling it personal reasons. We know they have the return date at Scotiabank Arena on February 1st. I know you and Kyle are tight, and I know you don't want to betray his trust, but it's unlikely there's going to be fans in the stands for that February 1st game. Do you think there's any part of Kyle that thinks, you know what, maybe I sit that game out and I play that game in April in Toronto?
Kyle likes the attention, and I think it's only right if he comes back and the fans are there. But I also know Kyle as well. He wants to play basketball, and he would love to play against his former team. So I really have no clue, because Kyle is a complex person. He's not a straight. I can't figure him out all the way, but as close as we are. But I know he loves to play the game, but I'm sure he really will love to play in front of the fans as well.
All right, Alvin.
So I didn't answer that question. I know I didn't answer the question. I kept dancing around it very well.
I know.
As you said, I can't portray his trust.
I know. But, yes, you know what? Maybe we read between the lines. Alvin, enjoy the game tonight. Thanks for this.
Thanks for having me.
All right, this is Alvin Williams, Sportsnet Raptors analyst. It's, sometimes he gives you stuff on Kyle, sometimes not. But, yeah, they're buddies from Philadelphia, both Villanova products. And, you can't pick and choose, I guess, which games you play, unless you're Kawhi Leonard, which he seemingly did that for an entire season. And guess what? Yeah. The Miami Heat are going to be in the playoffs. It's just one game. If you're Kyle Lowry, I just said, it's just listed as personal reasons tonight. Can you do it?
Yes.
I think there's two more games against the Raptors before the end of February. Can you continue to do that, personal reasons, so that you do make your return to Toronto in front of, God, knock on wood, that in April things will be different, that we'll have a full house at Scotiabank Arena for the greatest Raptor of all time's return to Toronto?
I think I'll go back to what you said to start. You said you can't pick and choose the games you play, can't they? Like, isn't there a lot of evidence that veteran guys in the league can pick and choose the games they play, as long as it's not life and death? As long as there's not a playoff position hanging on the line, can't you kind of say, no, I'm sitting this one out for what, personal reasons, or because I've tweaked something or whatever? Like, there's a lot of that, right? And again, I guess it's all variations on load management, but I think it probably is up to him, to be honest. You don't see guys take Christmas Day games off very often, or TNT games off very often, or games at Madison Square Garden off very often. But, you know, Tuesday night in Sacramento, yeah, maybe not. But I would think it's interesting. I love listening to Alvin talk about Kyle Lowry, because he does know, maybe he's more than he can say sometimes too, but remember what the first thing he said was, Kyle likes the attention. And he does. Nothing wrong with that. No. See, that's human. That's absolutely human. You want to come back and play in an empty building? You go back to your old building, and where there's a lot hanging in the air, except there won't be anything hanging in the air because the joint will be empty? Or would you rather just push it back a few weeks?
I know what I think. Yeah, me too. And as if, you know, he could build more goodwill amongst the Raptors fan base. But yeah, to decide to do that, even if it's unspoken, right? I don't know if you can. In fact, you'd probably get a fine if you said, hey, I'm not playing this game because there's no fans in the stands, and I want to do it in April when there is hopefully fans in the stands. But I think everybody's going to know what's going on if that's the case. And again, it's not an injury reason today. He's not listed as out with an injury. It's personal reasons. That would be a very personal reason if Kyle Lowry decided, hey, February 1st, his team returns to Toronto, but he's not going to play in that game, and he's going to wait until April to make his return to Toronto in front of, hopefully, is a full house.
I hope so. Please. Yeah. Please.
All right.
I'm just down to begging, Ben. I'm down to begging. I've got nothing left.
You and me both, man. I don't know if it's going to do any good, but it feels good. All right. We're going to take a break. When we come back, Christine Sinclair got an award today, which was not one that they had handed out before, but created especially for her. And she also divulged a little bit of information about her future plans, both with the Portland Thorns. Secondary thought. Primary thought, with Team Canada and a World Cup that's 2 years away and an Olympics that's 3 years away. We'll talk about that. Also, Logan Paul is apparently going to fight Mike Tyson, who is 55 years old. That and much more coming up next. It is the Fan Drive Time. Ben Ennis, Stephen Brunt, Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Fan Drive Time, Sportsnet 590 The Fan, Ben Ennis and Stephen Brunt. And you know you're good when they make up awards for you. Like, how do you feel about Lifetime Achievement Awards, Stephen?
I think.
Have you ever received one?
No. I'm available, though, if anyone would like to give me one. I always, as you know, Ben, I automatically, my thoughts automatically turn to Montgomery Burns in these circumstances.
Yes.
That's...
Yes, the outstanding achievement in the field of excellence.
That's exactly right, because they all kind of sound like that. But yes, it's you know, I think it's probably a weird one, because when you get one, it's like, you know, they're packing you away, right, sending you off into the sunset. You're done. So it's but you know, now what we're about to talk about, that's not the case. Two players, actually, you know, in their late prime, in the global sport. It is kind of a weird. What's the name of the award, because it is.
Yeah.
So FIFA invented this today, correct?
Yes. So yeah, in the Academy Awards, it's given to, you know, usually actors who are deserving of an Academy Award but never got one in their acting prime, and then they get one last gasp. She's gotten plenty of awards. Christine Sinclair has, but today, at the FIFA award ceremony, she was honored with the best FIFA special award, which I think you rightly said before the show that this sounds like something that was lost in translation. Perhaps this sounds a little bit better in a different language, because that sounds a little bit clunky. But anyway, it's just given. I don't need to explain to you why Christine Sinclair needs another award. Give her another one tomorrow. Yes, she deserves all of the award. But yeah, she was given it at the awards gala in Zurich. She wasn't there, but she spoke remotely. Here's some of what she had to say after she was given the best FIFA special award.
What truly matters most are the moments I've shared and the connections that I've made, you know, from celebrating with an entire country to experiencing the heartbreak of defeat with those closest to me, to all my teammates and staff members along the way. I hope you know how thankful I am for all of you. The thing I'm most proud of is being able to have been a part of the game from the very beginning, where there was limited support, limited professional environments, to now, where it's truly a global game, where there's professional environments, successful leagues, successful international tournaments.
All right, there's Christine Sinclair, 188 goals in 308 international appearances, 53 assists also. She's 38. She's not done yet, though, Stephen. So she's 38, and at the conclusion of every single international event that she plays, and including the just-concluded Tokyo Olympics, she's asked about her future, and she kind of hums and haws and never is really all that forthright about her plans, but she just keeps playing and playing and playing. And there was a reporter from the Associated Press today who got her, or I guess it was the Canadian Press, actually, who got her to at least admit that, you know what, she's going to play at least two more years with the Portland Thorns, and she's going to continue to play for Team Canada over that span, getting ready for the upcoming World Cup. Now, beyond that, she said she would not commit to the Paris Olympics in 2024, but we're going to see her play international soccer until she's 40 years old. So that's some certainty, it sounds like.
Yeah, it does. You know, like, Christine is really committed to the Thorns and the women's professional game, you know, and that league. You know, she's been part of a couple of leagues that didn't make it, but this one seems to be on much more solid ground now. And Karina LeBlanc, her former teammate, is now the GM out there, and Rian Wilkinson, who is her former teammate, is now the coach out there. So there's a bit of a Canadian women's national team. They got the band back together in Portland, so that I know she's very committed to that. You know, good news for Canada that she'll play at least the next through the World Cup cycle anyway. You know, I think the tricky thing is, I'm sure she can do it till she's 40 and be a, you know, an important part of that team, not just on the pitch, but also as a, you know, she's a mentor, and, you know, it's like having another coach there. You know, it's committing yourself to each one of those cycles, those training cycles, the cycle of qualification, the cycle of, you know, the international matches that you have to, you know, and you know, like little stuff, like, you know, the Canada just, they just had the women had an international window in these, you know, and obviously things are tricky in COVID, but normally you would bring in a team to play here, right? That you would bring somebody in to play against Canada. This was in the fall. And they had to go to Mexico, right? They had to decamp and go to Mexico City and have their camp and play matches. They played against the Mexican national team in Mexico, which, you know, like the men's team has, you know, been not treated that great at times historically, but they never would have made the Canadian men's national team do that. So you're pushing, you know, for all of her accomplishments. And like, well, look, one of the really good things about the FIFA award today, whatever it is, and, you know, yeah, it sounds like an ad for an online European casino, right? The words don't quite add up. You know what I mean? Oh, yeah. But or the lip, you know, the lips aren't quite synced. But yeah, at least they put her on the same stage as Cristiano Ronaldo.
That's right.
Right? Because the FIFA's terrible with the women's game, right? Historically, they, you know, this idea of going to a men's World Cup every 2 years, among the things that's going to do is destroy the women's World Cup. But, you know, they don't care. So at least they put them on the same stage and treated them the same way. The leading scorer in the history of men's soccer, leading scorer in the history of women's soccer, they treated them equally. But I just don't – what I would say, I guess what I'm saying in the long run is, as a Canadian, it's great to have her back playing for Canada as long as she wants to play. But don't take for granted, you know, what that would mean to someone personally. Like, she, we all – you know, like, she's not making Cristiano Ronaldo's money either. So no women are making money like the guys in the men's game. So it's a very different life, and it's a different level of commitment that they have to make to international football. And, you know, like, yeah, it's great when you're winning an Olympic gold medal. It's glorious, and there's nothing better in sport. But the getting there is not that glamorous for the women who play on our team.
Well, and the other thing is that obviously her role on the team that just won a gold medal at the Olympics was extremely diminished from the greatest player in the history of international women's soccer. She is still that, but she's not that. She's not taking the penalties at the crucial point to win that gold medal, and no one would fault her for not taking those kicks. What is she going to look like in 2 years now? I'm not saying that, like, you know, she's put the program in an unenviable position of saying, hey, thanks, but no thanks here. I'm sure if it ever got to that point, she'd be aware enough to say that, yeah, you know what, I had plans of doing this, but I can't do it anymore. But that's 40 years old, Stephen, in this game where it's like the most physical as far as, you know, cardiovascular that we have, maybe in all of sports, to compete at that level into your 40s. Not everyone can do it. That's why we keep asking her these questions at the conclusion of these tournaments, right? Like, when you turn 30, people start asking you those questions. She's 38 now.
Yeah, she's played a different role in that Olympics, and she has played a different role in lately. You know, Singh's been around for 20 years, so if you want to go back and look at her early career, yes, she was the one running, you know, running under long balls and, you know, pressing forward and outrunning defenders and that, playing a pure attacking role. That's not what she does anymore, and that's not what she's. But you know, she is. You kind of, again, think of kind of what the role that Thiba Hutchison plays with the men's team now, which is, you know, the calm center of that team, right? All of that experience. He doesn't quite have the legs that he used to have, but he's there to distribute, and he's there to kind of make sure that they're in shape and that nobody kind of, you know, loses their cool, and just to control the match. And Christine can do that. You know, she can play that role for the women. It's a great thing, to be honest, and I'm not sure any of us anticipate it, but it's a great thing that, you know, after that kind of golden generation of women's players that includes Sink and, you know, Karina and Rian and Cara Lang and a bunch of others, you know, they're all gone. They're all, none of them playing. But that we have a whole other group of very good young players and great young players who've kind of taken the bull by the horns, right? That we don't need Christine Sinclair to be the Christine Sinclair of 15 years ago because we've got other players. It's a testament to the program and to the individual talent and to some great coaching. You know, John Herdman did a great job. Bev Priestman's doing a great job. So yeah, she can take kind of an elder statesman role, play kind of tucked in behind the forwards, and then you have her experience and her soccer IQ available to you, which, you know, has got to be invaluable. It's, you know, it's funny when you, I've been around I was around the team in Ottawa a little bit in the fall, and you know, it's just there's two or three kind of players still who would kind of go back to another era, but really, it's them and a bunch of kids relative to them. You know, they refer to themselves as the V's, the veterans, and you know that and you know eventually it'll just be Sink, right? She'll be the last of that group, but I think it's a great thing for Canada that she's going to play for another couple of years.
Oh yeah. And you know what? If you're going to play in 2023, what's another year? Like, let's see it. Let's see it in 2024 at the Paris Games, defending gold medalist. And then maybe if she wants to go out after that, fine. Or maybe not. I mean, maybe just keep playing forever and ever and ever and winning a couple of more FIFA awards in that time. But yeah, good news story for Christine Sinclair today, getting a made-up award and announcing that she will return to the Canadian national team for two more years, at least. We haven't talked about the Leafs at all, because the Leafs are just good. The Leafs are good. You know what? It doesn't even matter if their goaltending's not as good. Because guess what? Jack Campbell has allowed 5 goals in 2 of his last 3 starts, and he's lost none of them in regulation, right? They picked up points in all of them. The Leafs are blowing these late leads, but coming back to win the occasional one. Pucks are bouncing off all kinds of players and stanchions and going into nets. And you know what? Mitch Marner's returning from the COVID list and setting up great Austin Matthews goals. But yeah, the Campbell thing is interesting to me, because it's not like he's played poorly either. It's not like in those games in which he's allowed 5 goals, he's, you know, letting in 200-foot shots or slap shots from the point beat him. But yeah, 5 goals is 5 goals. And it's not like his save percentage is all that low, too. I think it's still over 900 over those 3 games. But this is a guy who was playing at, this is not an overstatement, the highest level in the National Hockey League. Like, they could have made a case for him to be the Vezina favorite, and maybe even still. But he's no longer at the top of the NHL standings in regards to save percentage. And this is a guy that this organization has a huge decision to make either before the end of the season or at the conclusion of the season. And how he plays down the stretch and certainly into the playoffs will impact that. Like, is it possible, Stephen? I know this is a hard thing to imagine. Yes. Is it possible Jack Campbell is not the reincarnation of George Vezina?
I think he's been really good. And I think the most important thing right now, we had Verstegan and Chris Verstegan talked about this last week. I think the most important thing right now, because it's, you know, you watching these 5-4 or 6-5 games, like, who knows? What do you, in January, what do you make of them? That they have the offensive firepower to overcome a night when they're not airtight defensively and their goaltender's not great, or that they're playing too soft a game. And in the playoffs, they will get rolled over when things get heavier and tighter, and you can't do that. You can't play so loosey-goosey. I don't know. I would say don't, you know, let's call me in April, and I'll let you know. But I think the one thing that has to happen, you know, they just got Peter Mrazek back, right? So finally, he's now back playing. They've got to find a way to not run Jack Campbell into the ground between now and April.
Yeah.
Because he's played a ton, and he's been really good, and there's been some nights he's won some games for them. You know, he's been that good. But if you run him into the ground between now and April, you're not going to do much in the playoffs. You know, you need exceptional goaltending in the playoffs, even if you're a very, very good offensive team, which they are. So Mrazek's got to stay healthy, and he's got to be better than some of the other backups they had. You know, maybe he's a 1A even. You know, maybe he's a guy that's, if Jack Campbell had a bad night in the first round of the playoffs, you could switch him up for a night and give Mrazek a go, because he has at times been that good enough to do that in the National Hockey League. But you know, look, I think the Leafs are very relieved that there's no Olympics, so Jack Campbell's not going to China, and relieved that their other Olympians are not going to the Olympics. They're going to have to, you know, the schedule's going to kind of normalize, and the COVID, you know, in theory, they'll get to a point where there's nobody on the COVID list, and in theory, they'll get to a point when there are fans in the stands. But if you ask me, what's the most, once, you know, keeping Austin Matthews healthy and happy, obviously, is the number one thing. But right behind it would be that you want Jack Campbell fresh and feeling good and ready to go and ready to play every playoff game if that's what's required.
Yep, and it doesn't matter.
Period.
And it doesn't matter if you punt some of these games too, because like as I brought up,
nope.
I think last time we talked about the Leafs, like right now they're in the third seed. They played, they're 7-2-1 in their last 10. They can't make up any ground on the best team in the NHL and the Florida Panthers and Tampa Bay Lightning right there on 57 points too, except they played two more games. It's a beast of a division. You're going to have to beat a beast of a team in the first round and then the second round too, but this team is only judged on finally winning a playoff round. And if you finish atop the thing, you might get the Boston Bruins in the first round. So who cares? Like, honestly, who cares? You finish first in the division, you finish in the second wild card spot. And neither could be less relevant to this team. They've already proved that they're a pretty good team during the regular season. We're back to the same old thing. It's now that Peter Mrazek's healthy, yeah, you got to mix him in a little bit. You got to get Jack Campbell a breather or two and make sure that he is 100% come the postseason, because, yeah, finishing second or first in the Atlantic could not be less relevant. And even if you don't end up with the Bruins, maybe you end up with Sidney Crosby and the Pittsburgh Penguins, which I think Leaf fans would take like 100 times out of 100 over the Lightning and especially the Bruins. But, yeah, there's no easy outs in the entire Eastern Conference.
I want that one. I want Berkey's return. That's what I want.
Oh,
I want
goodness.
Berkey back for the playoffs.
I didn't even think about that, but yeah, that seeing Brian Burke at Scotiabank Arena perhaps celebrating a Penguins victory over the Toronto Maple Leafs might be too much for some people to handle. But yeah, that would be a pretty good first round matchup. I don't know how many rounds Logan Paul is going to go with Mike Tyson. Possibly not many. It's one of those exhibition matches, so like it won't even be scored, right? Like there's not going to be a winner as long as there's not a knockout. If there's a knockout, I guess you kind of got to say a guy won it, and it has not been officialized, but apparently they are in the late stages of negotiations and looking at like a $50 million purse, I guess, for the winner. I've seen differing numbers, but yeah, it looks like
you said, did you say Logan Paul? No, you have got your Paul brothers mistake.
Oh, sorry,
this is
Jake Paul.
Because
yeah,
it's very important, right, to get your, because you know, because people might be offended by you getting the wrong Paul brother.
No, and but Jake is the more accomplished boxer, right?
Yes, he's the boxery one. Yes, the more boxery one of the two.
And Logan has the better relationship with Mike Tyson because he went on his podcast. But yeah, you're right. Sorry. Jake Paul, it looks like he's going to fight 55-year-old Mike Tyson, which, yeah, as a joke, as all Paul brothers fights are. And 55 ain't 35. But, I mean, you do see boxers fight into their mid to late 40s, do we not? Like, how washed is Mike Tyson at 55?
Well, he's been washed for, like, he was washed for the last part of his real career, right? He didn't want to fight, as you may, you know, like, he quit a fair bit. The last time he was good, I'm trying, like, you know, again, you gotta go way back, right? So that's the interesting thing about Tyson for me is that people have completely forgotten the back end of his career and still kind of think about him as the guy that, you know, was knocking out Larry Holmes or Tyrell Biggs. But, you know, you might want to look at the calendar and see when that was. I don't know if this is an exhibition bout. See, there's two, like, in theory, what Jake Paul is doing now, you know, those bouts are quote unquote real. Like they're doing them with normal weight gloves and normal scoring, and they're not wearing headgear, and people have been knocked out. And so those are in theory legitimate, whether you know, however you feel about the matchups, they are legitimate boxing. Like what Tyson did with Roy Jones was an exhibition. So they wore big gloves and nobody got hurt. And, you know, the understanding was that nobody got hurt. And so it depends. Like, this is being billed as an exhibition, so it sounds like it's that. So maybe Mike, you know, knows enough not to go in there with somebody who might try and prove a point by hitting him. It's, yeah, look, I had a lot of fun covering Mike Tyson's career, but it's been a long time since he actually wanted to do it. You know, he actually wanted, I don't blame him, but he didn't like fighting anymore, didn't like getting hit. And, you know, I'm sure he needs the money, because who doesn't need the money? And I'm sure people on some level would pay to see it. So if those two things are true, it will probably happen. Because who's going to stop it? And I guess the other thing is, if you call it an exhibition, it doesn't have to be sanctioned by an athletic commission.
Right.
So that's the other one. Because they would not sanction a bout between a 55-year-old and Jake Paul. They won't. I think maybe, there's the famous last words. I'm sure there's a commission somewhere that would sanction it, or a country somewhere that would sanction it. They probably wouldn't do it in Nevada. Maybe Florida would do it. Like, Jake Paul's fought in Florida, and Florida's athletic commission is pretty dodgy. Maybe they would. Who knows? But if it's an exhibition, you don't need any of that stuff, right? So, but it'll be less real than some of what you've seen, and that's saying something.
Less real than, wow. Some, okay. Maybe our friend Ariel Helwani will be on the call of that whenever it, or if it happens.
If you know what, I'd work with him if they would like to pay me to do color commentary on that fight with Ariel. I would happily do that. I've done worse. I have done worse. I have sat ringside for worse. Believe me.
Before we go, I don't know if you saw this. Francisco Liriano retired today. Travis Snyder retired last week. I wasn't on. I don't know if you guys gave that any play, that Travis Snyder called it quits, which was was shocking as well. I mean, Travis Snyder was a guy, I mean, me and just about everybody else had high hopes for. I remember a multi-home run game he had at the Metrodome where you thought, well, this is it. This is happening. Francisco Liriano is a kind of an interesting guy in Blue Jays history, right? Like, they got him basically in a salary dump. The Pirates gave them some prospects, Harold Ramirez and Reese McGuire, to take on his contract, and he was valuable for that. And Reese McGuire is still with the organization. And then they flipped Liriano to the Houston Astros for who? Teoscar Hernandez. And he wasn't exactly dominant for the Astros in that World Series run, but he got a couple of big outs, I think, against Bellinger in the World Series. So, yeah, kind of an interesting guy. Like, when you mention Francisco Liriano to Blue Jays fans, okay, maybe they think about, you know, the ERA approaching 6 in his final season. But, no, I think they should think about the ERA under 3 in that first year after picking him up from Pittsburgh and Teoscar Hernandez.
Two of the better transactions, kind of quiet transactions in Blue Jays history. Like, really, you think about it. Like, they traded a guy in Hutchinson who was their opening day starter at one point. But, you know, his career completely
cratered after that. In 2015, I think, right?
Yep. And he was back. And he finally reappeared with Detroit last year, but he'd been, you know, out of the majors for, what, 3? Like, they knew more about Drew Hutchison than the Pirates did. And then to wheel Liriano to, you know, and Liriano did win a World Series with Houston, and got some outs for them, as I recall, that year. But, yeah, the Teoscar Hernandez, you know, whoever in the scouting high-performance analytics department who said, this guy, because they took on, who was the other guy? They took on a contract. They took on a bad contract. Nori Aoki, correct. But whoever, somebody in there must have said, you know, this guy's got some tools. I'm not sure if he can play the outfield, but he's got some tools. And, you know, look what they've got. You know, a guy who's, I just saw a list of the best outfielders in baseball, I think, that ESPN did, and he was on it.
Yeah, no, he's that's on it. That's a nice piece of business to give up Francisco Liriano for, perhaps a perennial all-star and definitely one of the biggest contributors for a Blue Jays team that was one win away from making the playoffs a season ago and perhaps is going to be a World Series favorite if and when this season ever gets going. By the way, I didn't talk about the negotiations, the first round of post-lockout negotiations last week. We're in for a fun couple of weeks. All right, maybe we'll get into it tomorrow, but perhaps there'll be some advancements. Perhaps not. All right, this has been The Fan Drive Time. Ben Ennis, Stephen Brunt, Sportsnet 590 The Fan.